today on Family Talk.
Welcome, everyone, to this Friday edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and however you're listening to us today, either by radio or online, we are grateful that you've joined us. On today's program, you're going to hear the conclusion of a fascinating conversation Dr. Dobson had with Dr. Robert Lewis, author of the book Raising a Modern Day Knight. Dr. Lewis is highly educated, with two master's degrees from Western Seminary and a doctorate from Talbot Theological Seminary. He speaks all over the country and has authored dozens of teaching curriculum and books, including Building a Win-Win Marriage and Real Family Values. Now, on our previous program, Dr. Lewis shared how his alcoholic father was emotionally distant and really not a very good role model for him. By God's grace, Dr. Lewis came out of that situation and has since developed a passion to see men become great fathers. On today's program, he'll discuss with Dr. Dobson the need for men to actively cheer for one another along the journey of fatherhood and how he instructs boys to relate to women and to meet their needs. Now, there's a lot to pack into this program, so here now is the remainder of our conversation featuring Dr. Robert Lewis on Raising Men of Honor, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Dr. Lewis, I'm really glad you have agreed to join us again today. You know, I've said it many times that if husbands and fathers understand their role, and if they're willing to follow a biblical model for their children, the nation will survive, in my view. But if they don't, I'm not sure in the long run that it will. Is it that significant and important in your understanding? Do you agree with that statement?
I totally agree. I think men are the first cause of everything, like it or not. Oh. And if they're the first cause for good, great things follow. If they're the first cause for evil, then only evil will follow. And I'm like you, Dr. Dobson. I worry that young males today are falling behind. They're losing their masculine will, their masculine vision, a sense of calling. And so they fall back into the foolish things of boyhood, even as they grow into full-grown men.
Look at the role models that are out there for them. Look at many NBA players, many NFL players. Look at the sitcom actors and the roles that they play. Mm-hmm. You'd never know that there are these principles that a man should follow and should be.
That's exactly right. The idea of a noble quest, a man of courage and action, you just don't see that. In fact, I think my wife sometimes gets a little frustrated with me reacting to commercials on television where the man
is a fool.
He's a doofus, fool. He's passive, and the woman is having to do everything for him.
You know, that just drives me crazy, watching the commercials on television, mm-hmm. because there is this stupid guy. He's in every commercial. He looks nerdy. He sounds nerdy, mm-hmm. and he does stupid things, while the women have it together, and they often just sneer at how dumb he is. Mm-hmm. Just watch that. You give boys especially a steady diet of that kind of stupidity, mm-hmm. and they will start to emulate
it. Yeah, it scripts their lives. It scripts their lives to become that. And I think when we look at the world in which we're in today, we're seeing a world where women, because of a lot of the vision that had been painted for them to excel, they are excelling, especially in the professional fields. And then you look at men, and the New York Times reported that males in college are where they were 30 years ago. They've fallen so far behind their female counterparts that today in America, 33% more women will graduate from college than men. Now, what does that say? It says that men have lost any kind of quest to be great at something. And that is going to pay huge, unfortunately, negative dividends to the culture that follows.
Robert, you have made a major emphasis in your ministry on Bible studies for men and men's support groups. Mm-hmm. What have you heard from them that led you to generalize and say many men don't know what it means to be a man? Are there stories that you've been told?
Yeah. Actually, it was a group of men who initially started this whole thing, taking me to lunch. You were in my church, and they said, we need something where men can get together and talk about their lives. They were all guys moving into their 30s where they felt like they knew everybody, but no one knew them. And there was stuff happening beneath the surface of their lives that they couldn't fully explain, and they just needed to talk about. And so that's where we began to meet as a group of men and begin to study the scriptures and talk in the, what I call a safe place about our lives.
Yeah.
And out of that came this eruption of loneliness where they couldn't talk about their failures, their incompetence at home, where they couldn't ask, what should I do as a dad to raise my son?
Yeah.
They were fearful of asking that question because they assumed everybody else knew the answer. There were wounds from their childhood they couldn't process, especially wounds with dad. And when you would talk about that in an audience about, did your dad ever say he was proud of you? You could look at the audience and a good 50 to 60% of the audience would start tearing up. These men would suddenly start getting in touch with this pain that they didn't know how to process. And so that's what led me to keep going. I'm in the right stream. Keep pressing forward, even though I was discovering as I went. Mm. But I was pressing in the right stream. And as we continued to learn and develop materials and discussions, guys started coming alive and began to be different men. And the people who reported that most were the wives.
That was the basic idea behind Promise Keepers,
right?
In the beginning, wasn't it?
Right, it was.
There is that widespread need to have community. You talk in your book about community.
It's huge.
About giving community to your boys.
Right.
Explain that.
Well, manhood is made in a community of men cheering for one another in common directions and with common vision and being given good practical application that get results. And that's what we try to do as a church community. That's the materials I've tried to develop, is getting men together on a regular basis to process life together. Because when they do, they actually call themselves much higher than you would ever expect them to get. I've seen unbelievable things with the men of our church once they get the clarity of what it means to be a man.
You know, on Mother's Day this past year, our pastor spoke on Proverbs 31, which gives us Solomon's description of the ideal woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll remember there's a statement in that proverb that refers to the fact that a husband can trust his wife
right.
when he is sitting with the other men in the gates.
Right.
In other words, there was a community of men that sat talking together about things that obviously mattered to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just occurs to me that that kind of association between men has been lost.
That's right.
There just is nothing exclusively masculine in this culture now, is there?
Right. What I tell guys, and it kind of catches them, I tell them that they need male cheerleaders. And they kind of pull back for a moment. What do you mean, male cheerleaders? And I say, you know, when we were young growing up, our parents cheered for us. They'd say, come on, you can do it, you can do it. Then when we got into high school, it was a coach or a teacher. Maybe it was in the workplace, our first boss. But somewhere for the noble things of life, about the time of your mid-20s, no one cheers for the noble things of life. And what I mean by that is that when you're on that business trip in Ohio, you didn't watch the pornographic movie. Who do you come back to and tell that to, and they cheer for you? Or you took your son on a special weekend away and just gave him focused attention. Who do you come back to and they hang a plaque on the wall and say, great job, Frank? Or who cheers for you when you did a romantic weekend with your wife, or you began to teach your kids the scripture for the first time, or took them through your tapes when they were about to turn 13? Who cheers for you? And the answer is no one. And then I tell the guys this, men always go where the cheers are. So if we start cheering for one another on the noble things, we'll go there. And I never will forget, I shared one time in our men's study about writing my wife a poem on our 25th wedding anniversary and getting down on my knees, and I'm not a poet, and getting down on my knees and reading that to her, and how that poem went from that moment to on the wall of our home. And after I shared that story, this construction worker came down afterwards, and he said to me, think I could write my wife one of them poems? And I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, it's our 25th, and I'm taking her on a cruise. I said, why don't you take her out on the deck at night, get down on her knees, and read her that poem? He said, I don't think I could write a poem. I said, yes, you can. I started cheering for it. About a month later, I saw him. He came up to me. He said, wrote my wife that poem. I said, how did it go? He said, you wouldn't believe it. And then we gave high fives and bumped chests, and I gave him a big old hug. And as I was doing that, I said, this is what men lack, male cheerleaders to pursue the noble things of life.
Let's go into greater depth with regard to what you tell an adolescent boy about how to relate to a woman, how a woman is different, what she needs from her husband if they are married, and how to understand the differences between the two. Mm-hmm. How did you approach that?
Well, the way I approached it first when my son was moving into his teenage years is to take teachable moments in regards to what I was doing with my own wife, because I think he loves mom as much as I love mom, so it's a good way to share that. So, for instance, if we walked up to a door and I would say, Garrett, grab the door, and he would look at me and I'd say, let me tell you, a man always initiates and honors a woman. So that could teach him that. Or when it was on her birthday or it was Mother's Day, rather than just going and buying a card, I told my son, Garrett, a woman loves words. She loves words, especially affirming words. And your mom in particular really loves to be affirmed with words. And so, and rather than just buying a card, we would sit down and I would have him write out what mom meant to him. And the whole time I would explain to him as he was doing that, one day you're going to marry a woman and what she needs to hear from you are affirming words, especially that you love her, that she's secure with you. And so it was things like that, those teachable moments. And then as they move forward in his life and got a little older in his later teenage years, you know, we actually took him through a manhood study where we explained to him, as well as some other sons that were in our study, what the top four needs of a woman were in my estimation, starting with security, then significance, those kind of things. And it just explained to him and then talked about how a man initiates with a woman, protects a woman, that a real man is a life-giving spirit, not a life-absorbing spirit. And we turn to 1 Corinthians 15 and says, see right there? It compares two atoms. The first atom, it says, the first original Adam was just a living soul because he sacrificed his masculinity. But do you see what it said about the second Adam? He was a life-giving spirit. That meant everywhere he went, especially with women, he was giving life to them, not taking their life. And I told him, I said, Mason or Garrett, I said, notice the men around you. They're always taking a woman's life, using it, but not a real man. Those kind of moments teach a son how to engage a woman.
You and I were tracking the same information from the same source because I talked in Bringing Up Boys about four responsibilities, biblical responsibilities, that a man has to a woman. The first is to protect and defend. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should give your life for her required. The second is to provide for. I mean, maybe she is working, outside the home. Mm-hmm. She's earning money. But the responsibility is yours, and
absolutely,
don't forget it.
Absolutely. Always give her that freedom to do what she needs to do. I always tell my boys, she can work, but she needs to have the freedom to stay at home when she needs to and if she wants to.
But it's his responsibility.
That's right.
The third is to provide leadership for the family. And the fourth is to take initiative in the spiritual dimension.
That's right.
When I was speaking just many times a year before I learned better, after I would speak, it was very, very common for women to come up to me with tears in their eyes and say, the greatest frustration in my marriage is my husband will not take spiritual leadership and has left it up to me. You hear that?
I hear it all the time. I hear it all the time. But one of the things I love is if you can paint masculinity in a way that helps a man see that spiritual initiative is part of becoming a real man, I've found that it unlocks the energy of a man to then want to take that initiative to be a spiritual leader. It's just spiritual leader always sounded like to a lot of men like it was hung out in thin air, and it's just what the super spiritual person did. But when it gets attached to his masculinity, that pride of wanting to be a man really encourages him to start praying with his children and taking initiative with his wife spiritually with the scripture and those kind of things. And I love seeing that, but it's attached to a vision of masculinity.
At this stage of my life, I have been blessed in many ways with what some people would call success. through this ministry, through writing, through a number of different things. You know what I am most pleased about in my life? It is that I have taken care of my family. Mm-hmm. My family, not just everybody else's. Mm-hmm. I have protected my wife. I have provided for her. I have provided leadership for our family, and I've provided spiritual leadership for mm-hmm. the family. I haven't done it perfectly. I wish I could do some of it over.
Sure, we
but I have devoted myself to that purpose. There's a sense of masculine identity and right. meaning that comes out of doing that job right.
It does. There's no greater satisfaction. In fact, I thought about two Christmases ago, we had all our kids in town and our grandkids and our son-in-law and our daughter-in-law, and they were all over at the house, and it was present opening time. And instead, I just stopped for a moment, read from Psalm 16. I said, before we open presents, let's just go around and share what God has done in your life. And I think it was the greatest moment of my life, because it took 2 hours for us to get around the room with tears and sharing about life change and Jesus Christ coming out of the lips of my kids with no pressure. And you could just feel the spiritual passion. And I thought, this is one of the greatest moments a man could ever have.
Did you tell your boys, if you take a girl out on a date, you don't even think of expecting her to pay for it?
No.
You have the money or you don't go.
That's exactly right. In fact, I think one of the hardest things was telling my daughters that you don't call boys, they only call you. Yeah. And then to watch
That's
them sit
totally
at home.
That's totally turned upside down.
Oh, it's totally turned upside
down.
But I watched them suffer waiting. And I realized, even again, we've got this generation of young men who are so passive. And my son, who's a senior in college, he told me, he said, Dad, the boys in this at this university have no initiative, none. And he said, and he told me from his viewpoint it was tragic, because he was trying to encourage the guys to take initiative, but they don't. They wait. They've been coddled. They've been pampered. But at the core, they have been drenched in a vision of passivity that I think is wreaking havoc on that male population.
You know, last weekend I took Shirley on a date, and I had it all planned, and I took her to a symphony, and we went out to a nice dinner before, and then to this wonderful concert, and she absolutely loved it. I didn't say, what do you want to do on Saturday night? Mm-hmm. I had it planned. Mm-hmm. When we were dating, I never called her to say, you got any ideas for what we can do? That's my responsibility.
Yeah.
Do you see it that way? Not only do I
see it that way, I constantly exhort men that when they do that, they inflame in the most positive way the souls of their wives and of their dates.
Robert, last time also we talked about your father, the fact that he was an alcoholic, that he never said that he loved you in the childhood years, and that he was not a good role model for you, and there was that soul hunger, that male emotional need that you talked about. But at the near the end of the book, you talked about the end of that story with your dad. You've got to share it here at the closing moments of this program.
Well, the thing that was so amazing is that, I prayed and prayed for my dad for years. In fact, one time I met him at breakfast real early in the morning, tried to share the gospel. He wasn't interested in. And there came a moment where my dad, in a drunken kind of stupor, hit my mom accidentally. He didn't know he even hit her, but hit her, and she fell back on a table as he was walking out of the house, and it fractured her neck. It was a very serious injury. My dad didn't know he had done it. He went out and spent the night out somewhere. My mom had to be taken to a hospital where for the next 6 weeks she had pins in her skull and traction. And the result of that was that the police found my dad and told him that that had happened. He immediately had a heart attack. Because, again, this
he
was...
He didn't want to be this was that kind of man.
This is a man like a lot of men, locked up inside himself, wanting to get out, but with no key. That's the way I've always seen my dad. And I think his heart showed that he did love my mom, and just the expression of the heart attack. But I remember I came in that evening to see him in the hospital, and a friend of mine was his cardiologist and was worried about whether he would live. And I went in and talked to my dad. And when my dad came kind of to consciousness, he told me that he deserved to go to hell. It's the first time I'd ever heard my dad even say something religious. And I've never said this to a person. I said, yeah, you do. But you don't have to. And it gave me the opportunity of sharing the gospel with my dad, who prayed to receive Christ. But in the midst of that, which was both a celebration, as he kind of went in and out of consciousness, he suddenly thought I was the physician and began to talk about his son, who he was so proud of.
Oh, my.
And it was like on one evening I got the double blessing. I got the blessing of hearing my dad say to me that he was proud of me, but I also got the opportunity as a son to introduce my dad to Jesus Christ.
You went in and hugged him every day?
Oh, yeah.
And it's never too late, is it?
It's never too late because a son will always want to reconnect with his dad.
There's a vacuum inside.
It is. God meant it to be that way. The glory of sons is their fathers, and that will be true for a man to his dying day.
Well, we're talking today to men who think it's too late. Mm-hmm. Some of them are 40 years of age or 30, and they think it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not.
It's
you
never
can
too late.
Still establish a relationship.
It might require for you as a dad, even hearing this broadcast with your own dad, to just go and reach out to him. It may mean if you're a dad with a son with a broken relationship, you may need to go confess to him and just simply tell that son, I'm sorry, I missed
it. Well, what if that man we're talking to has done some pretty wretched things in life? In the case of your dad, he'd been an alcoholic and broke his wife's neck accidentally.
Mm-hmm.
There are worse things that somebody can do. Some are guilty of murder.
Mm-hmm.
God couldn't forgive them, could he?
Oh, yeah. And you've seen the wonder of that. In fact, I remember one dad coming up to me who was talking about how bitter his two sons were towards him because when they were teenagers, he had left their mother. And he had, for years, thrown money at them, tried to spend time with them and to buy off their love with everything other than an apology. And I said, well, how's that working for you? And he said, we just can't connect. And I said, well, let me ask you a question now that you're a believer in Jesus Christ. Do you think it was wrong for you to leave your wife?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yes. And I said, why don't you go tell your sons that what you did was wrong and ask their forgiveness? He said, I couldn't do that. I said, why not? And he thought for a moment. He said, well, maybe I could. He said, you think that would work? I said, well, let's try it. So he went, and he did. He went to his sons and said, I have tried everything and it hadn't worked, and I love you boys, but I am sorry. It was wrong for me to divorce your mom. And in that moment, there was a deep reconnection because those boys had been boys in waiting to reconnect with their dad, but they're not going to do it inauthentically.
Mm-hmm.
They're only going to do it when there's true authenticity.
What an encouraging end to today's program. For the fathers listening who feel like you've failed your children, now is the best time to redeem that relationship and fix whatever problems you may be having. If you enjoyed the conversation we've been featuring here over the last couple of days and would like to find out more about Dr. Robert Lewis's ministry or his book, Raising a Modern Day Knight, go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. You can also learn more about his men's Bible study curriculum, and if you'd like, you can listen to the first part of this interview from yesterday's program. Find all of that and much, much more when you visit drjamesdobson.org and click onto the broadcast page. While you're online with us, we urge you to like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Simply search for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk when you're on any of those social media platforms. Our social media pages will update you on our latest broadcasts, keep you informed through Dr. Dobson's latest newsletter or any of the articles we have posted, and encourage you through uplifting pictures and scripture verses that you'll be able to read there. Also, while you're visiting our pages, feel free to message us about what you enjoy about our ministry and even pass along a suggestion for someone you'd like to hear on one of our future broadcasts. You can get plugged into our various social media accounts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram when you search for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening today and for your consistent prayers and financial support of this ministry. Hope you have a great weekend, and we invite you to come back again next week for more right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton here for Family Talk. You know that when you became a parent, you quickly found out that kids don't come with instruction manuals. Well, you're going to be glad to know that at least now we've got a free iPhone app tailored just for you from Family Talk. This app customizes resources around where you are in life. Whether you're a mom or dad looking for some encouragement in your marriage, yes, this is the app to help you get through those tough issues. It's packed with parenting and marriage advice from Dr. James Dobson. Hey, there's one more special feature on this, too. It'll help keep you connected to God and your family. Go to the Family Talk website right now, drjamesdobson.org, and do this, /app. drjamesdobson.org/app. Get your free customized Family Talk app today.